Lesson tonight is be strong and be courageous. It comes from Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9, which we will read. But before I start, I'd like to, for those who have not had me for a teacher before, I sort of need to explain how I teach. My purpose is not to tell you what I think of the Bible. My purpose is not even to interpret the Bible for you. My purpose is to lead you into the Bible that you may draw your conclusions from the material presented therein. I encourage, in fact, I solicit participation. So you'll need to get your Bibles out because I will be asking people to read from the Bible. And with that, let's go ahead to Joshua chapter 1, Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. And before we start, what do we know about Joshua? Was he a strong man? Was he a courageous man? Before you answer that, let's think a minute and decide what do we mean by strong. The Webster's Dictionary, online dictionary, says to be strong is to possess strength. To be courageous is to exhibit courage. So what is strong? For biblical purposes, there's two kinds of strong. That is, someone who has great physical strength, and when we think in the Bible, who do we think about? Samson. Samson strong? Who's a very strong man, physically? How about spiritually, which is the other form of strong we're talking about? Samson had a lot of weaknesses. He wanted a woman he should not have married. He tended to be a little arrogant, we might say, which was his downfall. In the end, he did hold true to the Lord, but in so many ways he did drift from the Lord. And he paid for it. The other definition of strength, the one that we are probably referred to, is able to withstand great fear or great pressure. And I think in this particular case, this is the kind of strength that we're referring to when we think about Joshua. How about courage? What is courage? Courage is able to do something that frightens you. Think about that. Think about soldiers in battle. I don't know if any of you have ever been in battle before. It is not a pleasant experience. It is not an easy experience. You are frightened for your life. You just want to curl up and hide or run away. But very, very few soldiers do that. Why? They have an inner courage. But it isn't just in battle that people exhibit courage. You can exhibit courage in everyday situations. Let's think about some biblical characters. Think about a young man named Stephen, 17 years old. He was not even an adult by most reckoning. But what did Stephen do? Stephen went in and he preached the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the gospel truth, knowing that it was a hostile audience, it would probably cost him his life, and it did. That young man had courage. Think again about this courage we're talking about, of Jesus himself. Jesus in the garden, when he's praying there in the Garden of Gethsemane. Did Jesus know what was facing him that night? What was coming up? The humiliation and the pain, the very painful death that he was going to face. He prayed for strength. So yes, Jesus was afraid. But he had the courage to face it, knowing that it was his mission. And when he was taken by the temple guards, he did not fight. Yet, he exhibited the courage, what we would say, the courage of his convictions. So the courage is to be able to do something that frightens you. It is a strength, that you inner strength, that you have in the face of fear or pain. So, it's physical, mental, or spiritual courage that we're talking about. and this mental, physical, or spiritual strength. For our purposes, I think we're referring mostly to the spiritual strength, spiritual courage. So with that, let's turn to the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. Let's think about what has happened. Let's set set the stage, so to speak. What has happened? The children of Israel have been freed from Egyptian slavery. 430 years of Egyptian bondage have come to an end. They have been freed by Moses and, by God. Moses has freed them with God's grace and God's instructions and God's help, obviously. But what happens then? They, for 40 years, they wander in the wilderness because of their lack of faith. Many, many of the children of Israel were ready to turn back and return to Egypt, to that life of bondage and slavery. So they had to wander in the desert for 40 years. Most of you have probably never heard of a man named Ord Wingate. Ord Wingate was a British Army officer. He served in what was then British Mandate of Palestine and later in World War II. He is considered one of the fathers of modern special warfare. He was also a biblical scholar. He used the Bible to train what he would call the night columns for what was then the Haganah, the pre-Israeli defense forces. This was before the state of Israel. But he used the Bible to train them. He used the Bible literally as a map to find roads that had been abandoned since Roman times. But he trained his men to follow biblical principles. And we'll cover one of those, a guy named Gideon, one of his favorite heroes. But what Ord Wingate said he did not view those 40 years in the wilderness as just wandering. He says this was 40 years of boot camp for the children of Israel. They used this time to organize themselves, to train themselves, and to tough themselves up, not only physically, but spiritually, for their time going into the Promised Land. Let's turn to Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. No man, this is God speaking directly to Joshua. Joshua has been appointed the leader. Moses has died. He's not going to be able to go into the Promised Land. That job has been given to his assistant, his second in command, Joshua. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded to you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Please note that word, commanded. Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, as I said, these words were spoken directly to Joshua as he took on the leadership to bring the tribes of Israel into the Promised Land. But 4,000 years later, those words still echo to us. Notice the word, as I have commanded, be strong, be courageous. It's not a suggestion. It's not a wish. It is from the Lord a command. Be strong and be courageous. So we've already defined strength, and we've already defined courage. But how do we get that way? Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 through 6. Hebrews 13, verses 5 through 6. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? God promised he would be with you. But note, God will be with you with a caveat. Let's go back to Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, verse 8. What did he say? Keep these commands that Moses, my servant, has given to you. God was with Israel as long as Israel was faithful to him. When Israel turned from God, God turned away from Israel. So the number one step to being brave or being strong and courageous is be right with God. Look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6 again. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? So if God is with you, what can man do to you? They can harm you physically. They can make your life miserable. But mankind cannot ever touch your soul. That soul was given to you by God in your safekeeping. And its disposal, believe it or not, is up to you. Where your soul ends up, that's your decision. But man can't touch it. Even the devil cannot touch your soul. He can trick you. He can tempt you. And you can give it to him. But that soul is yours. So be strong and courageous. And as James said, resist the devil and he will flee from you. That very fact there should give you courage. But you have to be strong. Now, it's very interesting. The words strong and courageous in Hebrew are, Hazak v'amatz. Hazak v'amatz. Those are the two Hebrew phrases, the two Hebrew words that mean strength and courage. They both have consonantal roots that when you break it down mean basically patience or steadfastness. So understand that being strong and courageous is not something short time. It is not something one time. It is a long year, for many years, maybe forever thing. It takes persistence. Both of these, being strong and being courageous, will take persistence. They will take patience. And they will take, in our case, committed and continuous study. Studying what? How about the Word of God? This sometimes not so little book that we have right here. What is the Bible? The Bible is the inspired work of God. The words of God, literally written down by man, inspired words given by God to selected writers to record from us. If you want to know what God thinks, if you want to know what God likes, what God dislikes, look in the Bible. It spells it out plainly. Look at the Bible. It will give you a look into the mind of God. Let's go back to Joshua. Joshua said what? Or rather, God said to Joshua, be what? Be strong and be very courageous. He says it four different times in those little passages that we read. And it wasn't a suggestion, as I said. It is a command to him. Now, why in particular did he tell Joshua these things? What is Joshua doing? He's going into a land that he's never seen before by people who are prepared for war. by people who were prepared to resist the incursion of the children of Israel into him. These men are generally bigger, better fed, they're organized, much more so than the Israelites were. And remember whom Joshua is leading. He's leading the children of Israel, and what has been the problem with the children of Israel? Remember, 40 years before, they were brought out of Egyptian bondage to go into the promised land. But what happened? They had a weak moment. They turned their backs on God. They had to be returned to God. And so Joshua is leading people who are possibly fearful, possibly fragmented. They need strong leadership. So Joshua is being told to be strong and courageous for them as an example. He has to be strong and he has to be courageous so that they in turn will be strong and courageous. Throughout history, you will see men, particularly in the military, you will see, and in nations, you will see units, military units, or nations that are strong when they have a strong leader, or nations that are broken and weak when they have broken, weak, and indecisive leaders. So Joshua, God knows that Joshua has to be strong. And he's laid down how Joshua needs to do it. Let's turn to James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. It's a chapter right after Hebrews, so it's not too difficult. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. And I read, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." The testing of your faith. God didn't promise you a rose garden, an easy life. He promised you full salvation at the end of this life if, it's a big if, you remain faithful and committed to God and follow his commands. And they aren't onerous. What are God's commands? What are God's commands? It's very simple in the New Testament. It breaks it down to two things. What are God's commands? Now, in the Old Testament, you had the Ten Commandments. In the two Testament, we don't have these two commandments, but that's what it breaks down to. First one is what? Love God with all your heart and obey his commandments. That is the first one. What is the second commandment from God? To love your neighbor as yourself. And when Jesus says those words, he fills it up with one other thing. What? And on this lay all the words, the law, and the prophets. So James says that you are going to be tempted, you are going to be tested, but you should be grateful, you should be happy. Why? How do you physically get strong? Do you get strong physically by sitting on the couch, chomping down potato chips, and flipping that remote control? How do you physically get strong? You get your rump off the couch and you go running, you go exercising, you go lift weights, you eat the proper foods. Now, how do you spiritually get strong? Do you get spiritually strong by attending, coming here and meeting three times a week? Is that how you spiritually get strong? No, what do you do? You study the Bible. You read the Bible. You follow the commandments. Yes, sir.
I was thinking of John 6:63, which Jesus said, "The words that I speak to you are spirit and they are life, spiritual life." I look at that as spiritual strength also.
It is. That's how you get it. It is life. Life breathes into you from the Word of God. You know, this is not just a one-way street. You don't just read this and look at it. It's not empty words. When you read the Bible, when you study, what happens inside you? That spirit from the Bible comes into you. It gives you strength. It gives you the physical strength and the courage that you need. It's found here in the Bible. Now, what is James saying here? James is saying, yeah, you'll be tempted, but it's going to build you up when you resist. When you resist your temptations. The more you say no to temptation, the easier it is. The more you say yes to temptation, the easier it is to say yes the next time. It works both ways. So how to be strong and courageous? Build up your spirit. Strengthen your spirit. Let's take a look at 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. This is once again an exhortation by Paul to Tim, this particular case to Timothy, but in reality to all of us, specifically to Timothy, secondary to all of us, that we have to be diligent to present ourselves approved. And how do we become approved? Well, see, it goes back to that spiritual courage and that spiritual strength, living the spiritual life, living the approved life by God, learning, building our strength up, building our knowledge up, living a good life in spite of all the temptations. Nobody said it was easy. God never said it was easy. When mankind was dismissed from the Garden of Eden, God said that you would live by the sweat of your brow. You were no longer just going to be able to sit and pick the fruit in the garden. You're going to have to work for it. And it's the same for our salvation. Our salvation is there, freely offered, but you have to accept it and you have to lift the burden to get there. God's not just going to hand it to you. You've actually got to get up and take it from His hand. You have to work for it. And this morning, Brother Brian gave this lesson about how the devil is out there. What's he trying to do? He's trying to take your soul from you. He's trying to get you to give you his soul. So it takes strength and it takes courage to resist the wiles of the devil. In this particular case, Timothy is saying, you know, Paul is telling Timothy, you know, cautioning him, telling him to be prepared, to work hard, and to be ready for anything. Let's take it 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10. Give me 2 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, it says, "Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." Now, it's easy to become complacent and say, yeah, I'm leading a good life. I'm going to heaven. I'm free from sin. Well, are you sure about that? Now, think about this. We've all been in this situation, I'm sure. We thought we were in pretty good shape, but, you know, it's a little achy this morning. I'm not going to get out there and exercise. I'll put it off until tomorrow. In fact, tomorrow I'll run 2 miles instead of one. You know, make it up for it there, right? And tomorrow comes around, and boy, you know, I had that. I had to study for that test. I just don't feel. I'm a little sleepy, a little creaky this morning. I don't think I'll exercise this morning. I'll make it up tomorrow. I'll run 3 miles tomorrow. Pretty soon, it's been a couple of weeks, and what has happened? You haven't exercised, blown up like a balloon, and it's a lot of work to get back down to where you were before. That's what Paul is warning us about here in this one. We have to okay, next I think I read the wrong one. 1 Corinthians 10:13. I read the wrong one. I'm sorry. 1 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." So as we were talking about, when you haven't exercised for a while, you haven't done your spiritual exercises for a while, understand that it's not God's fault. It's our own. Notice that. You're going to be tempted. You're going to have trials. You're going to have difficulties in your life. But God has promised here He will never allow you to be tempted beyond what you can handle. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Verse 12. But God will not allow you to fall. You will have the ability to resist if you choose. God's not going to make that decision for you, but he's going to give you the means to resist. Yes, sir.
Study through the entire book of 1 Corinthians, you'll get to chapter 15, verse 58, the end of that chapter, where he says, I think he's still talking about the same principle of focus here. The way you overcome the common temptation that we all face is to be focused. So he says, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know your work is not in vain in the Lord, but it's work. 1 Corinthians 15, 58.
It is work, and it's daily work. It's like that exercise we were talking about. You don't put it off, you do it every day. Any good battle commander in the military will tell you that a major victory is the product of many, many small victories. December 1944, when the Germans launched what became known as the Battle of the Bulge, it ended up being the largest land battle the United States has ever fought, with the number of troops involved and the number of operations involved. Yet it was not one huge, big battle. It was literally hundreds of small battles. Some are well known, like the Battle of Bastogne, where there were two regiments of the 101st Airborne plus a couple of battalions of anti-aircraft and three battalions of tanks helped off an entire German army, five armored divisions, for about a week. That's the one that's most well known. But there's other battles, like Eisenborn Hills, which was basically two companies that helped back an entire German division for 3 days. Helsingborn, one platoon, less than about 30 men, helped off an entire German regiment. In other words, about 1,500 men for a crucial 24 hours, which gave time. But it was many, many little battles like that that won the Battle of the Bulge. And it was a victory for the United States. In the same way, every day that you are fighting these little battles against temptation and the wiles of the devil, you are winning. Keep your eye on the goal. When you're running, any runners here, when you are running, what are you watching? Where are your eyes fixed on the final goal? Now, you can break it up. I know when I was running in high school, I always I had to run the 1600, in other words, the mile run, roughly. 1600 meter, the mile run. I would keep my eye on this particular, we ran on a round track. 8 circles was a mile. So I would keep track. Okay, I've crossed the start line, and I was immediately focused on reaching the start line again. That's number one. Then I'd immediately focus on the start line again. That's number two. You can set short-term goals, but all in all, the goal is I know I had to reach 8 full laps in a certain amount of time in order to place, to be in the top 3. The same way here. Strong and courageous means faithfulness. Let's go back to the original Hebrew terms. Excuse me, hazak v'amatz. As it said, patience and steadfastness. Those are the roots of those. It does mean strong, hazak, and amatz is courage. In Hebrew, in both modern and biblical Hebrew, the point is, it takes time and steadfastness, stick-to-itiveness, we might say. Let's turn to Romans chapter 8, verse 18. Romans chapter 8, verse 18. Remember this. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. So it's going to take strength and courage to stick with the straight and the narrow path. And you've got to build that up every day with these little victories that we're talking about. But the important thing is to keep your eye on the goal. In this particular case, understand that the pain and the suffering and the torment, and then yes, the temptations that you're going through every day here on earth are nothing compared with the final goal. Any athlete will tell you that he spends hours on the practice field, whether it's a football, basketball, track, choose your sport. All those hours spent in practice, when you've won that victory, whatever it is, that final touchdown, that final goal, toss the javelin in the line, whatever the point is, that victory makes it worthwhile. And yes, it takes strength and it takes courage. It takes the courage of your convictions and it takes the strength you need to go through this every day, to put yourself through that torture. And yeah, exercise is a type of torture. It can be. But is it worth it? Yes, I think so. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 17. 2 Corinthians this time. Excuse me. Second Corinthians 4, verse 17. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more and exceeding eternal weight of glory. Notice that phrase, eternal weight of glory. So yeah, it's an affliction, but it's a light affliction. It's physical pain. Maybe it's mental distress, but if our spirit and our faith is strong and faithful to God, what does it matter? It's a type of focus. Now, we have several college students here. What do you focus on when you're studying? What do you focus on? Well, let's be honest. You're focusing on passing that next test. Yes, I was a college student once, I understand. Now, that's your short-term goal. Long-term goal, what is your focus? To graduate with that degree. And hopefully with the skill set that you came to college to learn. It's the same thing here. We're focusing on that goal in heaven. We're focusing on building up our courage and our strength to get there. Revelations 21:4. Revelations 21:4. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have all passed away. That's our ultimate goal. That's why we focus on building up our spiritual strength and holding fast to our spiritual courage. Because in the end, what do we get? What is described here in Revelations 21:4? No more tears, no more pain, no more suffering, no more torment. Just eternal peace and eternal light. Hebrews chapter 11 talks about the great, we're not going to read it, obviously, the entire thing, but Hebrews chapter 11 is called the great chapter of faith. It talks about Abraham who left a comfortable, civilized home for a life of wandering in the desert, setting up a tent, and every few days, tearing down that tent, moving on to a new pasture, and setting up the tent and starting over again. He had to fight for his existence, literally, because there were, he had herdsmen, he had herds, and of course there were people trying to take it from him. It talks about the faith of those who died rather than renounce their faith. What were they? They were sawn in half. They were crushed to death. They were shot with arrows. They were beheaded. Yet they held firm to the faith. It took courage to be a Christian under the Emperor Nero. The Emperor Nero literally would use Christians as torches for his ceremonies, for his nighttime garden parties. He would literally take Christians, wrap them up in oil-soaked rags, and set them on fire. All I had to do to avoid this was to say, I'm not a Christian. Yet it is recorded in Pliny and in others that Christians went to this fate singing hymns of joy. That's courage and the strength of their convictions. How did they get that courage? And the answer is very simple. They followed the Word of God. They believed God's promise. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 6. Returning to Joshua. Think about why Joshua was chosen for this particular leadership role. And Moses is here speaking to the words of all of Israel, and he's talking about going into the promised land. And he says, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. These words are repeated 40 years later when this was Moses. These words are repeated 40 years later by God to Joshua when Joshua is getting ready to actually lead the children of Israel into there. Be strong and of good courage. Why? Because the Lord your God is with you and will not forget you nor forsake you. So people ask, how do you be strong and how do you be very courageous, particularly in this modern world, when all that we hold dear seems to be under attack from all sides? The answer is obvious. Hold fast to God and His Word. That's how you're strong and that's how you're courageous. You need to exercise yourself every day spiritually. Just as you exercise yourself physically, exercise your spirit. Go to the God in prayer. Ask for understanding. Pray for strength. Pray for forgiveness. Exercise your spirit by learning more every day. Knowledge is literally power. Those who have knowledge have power. Those who don't have knowledge do not have the power. And it's never more true than when we're talking about our spirit. Because think about it. Knowledge is power in the secular world. If you know the right things, you can make a fortune. But in the long run, what is the ultimate fortune? The one that lasts forever. Gold will eventually tarnish or wear away. And when you die, you ain't taking it with you. But what is the one thing that will never tarnish, never fade away, and when you do die, you take it with you. And that is your reward in heaven. So when you need, when your faith, pardon me, when you feel weak, when you don't feel courageous at all, think about these words that God has given you. Let's go to John. We'll close out the chapter here, the lesson here with John chapter 1, verses 1 through 15, or 1 through 5, rather. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. Think about those words. God is light. When we're surrounded by darkness, there is always light. You just have to look up and see it. In my younger days, I was very young. I think I was maybe 15 or 16. I served as a lifeguard at a Boy Scout camp. In the Boy Scouts, we have a particular rule. It's called a buddy system. When you go to swim, you hang your tag up on what is known as the buddy board. That means you're swimming. When you leave, you are to take that tag with you, telling the lifeguards that you're no longer swimming. Sometimes it happens that teenage boys forget. Imagine that. They don't take their tags off. So one day, at the end of the day, we're looking and there's a tag still left on the board. Where's the boy? The drill is you immediately do a lost swimmer search, which means you dive down and see if you can locate at this time what is probably a body. I was the smallest guy, which means I could go down all the way. We were swimming in a river. It was not a pool. This was a river. So the water was clear for the first 5 or so feet, but beyond that, it gets pretty murky. So I would take a deep breath, let it out, sink down, walk around the bottom trying to find, see if there was a body. I did this several times. Eventually, in that darkness, because by that time the water's over your head about 15 feet, there's no light. You're in darkness. It's just a little bit. You can maybe see here. And I suddenly realize I'm floating, and I don't know which way is up and which way is down. So what do you do? I had just a little bit of breath, just a little bit. Like that. I was able to pop out just a couple of bubbles, and then I could follow, and I knew that's the way to go. It was dark. It was cold. I was shaking. I was out of oxygen. But I'll follow that little bubble, and suddenly I could see light. As I got higher, the light got wider, it got brighter, and I got warmer. Sin is like that. It is darkness and coldness. You don't know that you're in sin until it's too late. You're in it and you need to find some way out. How do you get out? You find the light. So the lesson I learned then is you need to be vigilant, you need to be on your toes. You need to study. You need to be strong, and you need to be very courageous. Luckily, the boy had just forgotten his tag. We found him up in his tent, and he was banned from the swimming area for the next 3 days. So, happy ending to the story. Let us all turn to chapter... Well, before we do it, have you ever thought about the word courage? Where does the word courage come from? The word courage, believe it or not, is a Norman French word that was brought over during the Norman Conquest to the English language. It comes from à le cœur, which means from the heart. From the heart. That's where courage comes from. It means that you keep God in your heart, and God will never fail you and never abandon you. To finish it out, Romans chapter 8, verse 31. Romans 8, 31. What shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? That right there should give you strength and give you courage. I thank you all for your attention. I hope this lesson has been helpful to all of you. Thank you again. Mm-hmm.